And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonableist podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me on the line, as always, Eric Kareen. Eric, what's up, man?
Not too much, Blake. How are you?
I'm all right, man. You know.
I'm convinced.
Things are as they are.
Things be what they be.
It do be like that, though.
It is what it is, as a song in the year 2020 by The Antlers goes. They were beat to that phrasal punch by professional athletes dating back to... Who do you think was the first person who said, it is what it is? Obviously, we don't know. But do you think it happened in the context of pro sports or not?
Yes, I would assume, like, my brain went to a PJ Tucker-ish, like, no comment kind of thing. It's like, what is your contract status or your extension status? It is what it is.
Yeah.
That's what, like, when we, the first question we finally get to ask Kyle.
Yeah.
Will be, it is what it is.
Now I'm going to have to think, not that I will ask the first question necessarily, but I'll have to think of a question that could elicit that response.
What do you think of the CBA that Bobby wrote that prevents you from being extension eligible right now?
Exactly. Very good.
And he'll say, it is what it is.
Yeah. Poorly written.
Yeah. Speaking of poorly written, over at theathletic.com/Raptors, you can check out all the stuff Eric and I have been doing. I would say training camp-ish, but we're not physically there, and it hasn't been the usual training camp content. Instead, it's just been, the offseason was 13 days long, so it was a lot of getting you ready for who's on this roster, and now it's a lot of sorting through, getting to know them. We had Eric's giant profile on Malachi Flynn that was awesome and went up Tuesday. I did something on Chris Finch and the offense and what he, as a new assistant coach, could bring to the mix, and then I assume you'll be reading that elsewhere since Nick Nurse basically read that article on the air during his media availability today without saying as much. And then, Eric, you also have an Alex Len thing coming as well.
Yeah, I had a nice chat with him about a whole topic of things, growing up in Ukraine, his bout with COVID over the summer, I guess, before the restart. He's a nice dude. It was nice to chat with him.
Yeah. So if you want to check all that stuff out and you're not already a subscriber, theathletic.com/we6. That's the number 6. And you can get, I believe there is a buy one, get one, gift one is the appropriate way to say that. BOGO, you know, as it were. So, Eric.
Blake.
Last week,
yes.
We did kind of a training camp tee up. We obviously didn't get to everyone. We talked about Nurse leaning toward familiarity, especially early in the season. We talked about the new schedule. We talked about potential closing lineups and our general vibes and the new centers. There is no shortage of things we could talk about. Still, we could talk about Kyle Lowry or OG Anunoby. But let's start at Pascal Siakam. Actually, let's start with the one thing we probably have to check off, which is the Raptors organization announced 3 positive COVID tests this week. They have not been updating, you know, who's at practice, who's not. It is a matter of privacy. We don't know even if they were players or staff or what, although Nick Nurse did say that first day that they had a full complement of players, but it's possible.
Yeah, that was the first day of team practices on Sunday is when he said that. Yes. So that was before everybody's full knowledge, that was before the news of the 3 positive tests came out publicly on Monday.
Yes. Okay, so that's, you know, we're not going to speculate on who or how or anything like that, but other than to say that it's something that's being monitored, and if it was a player, we'll probably know Saturday, because the protocol suggests they would not be available for that preseason game, although it's possible that they're just not going to dress 20 guys anyway. If you remember, today was supposed to be intra-squad scrimmage day, and I forgot to ask Nick about that, although we did get the detail that Paul Watson looked good after a shaky start to camp. The other person that Nick Nurse was talking about looking good, and I think has had the most interesting and thoughtful...
Before we get on to that, just one final note on COVID-19. This is going to happen throughout the year, throughout the league. I'm not trying to be negative or glib about it in any way, but I mean, we've seen how other sports have been affected by this that are similarly traveling throughout the continent, that, you know, that there, this is not a bubble. This is sort of what I wrote on Monday after the news. They can only do so much to keep everybody safe when they're not creating a bubble environment. And I'm not advocating for that, because doing that over 8 months is a lot different than doing that over 3 months max. But you should expect many disruptions in terms of who's available, some rescheduling of games I'm sure is going to happen. That's part of the point of only releasing one half of the schedule at a time. So it's sort of weird to be just saying, hey, three guys tested positive, when 9 months ago, one guy testing positive, or I guess two guys, shut down the league for 4 months. But this is where we are now, and people have got to expect that this strange reality is going to be part of following NBA basketball in the 2020-21 season.
Yeah, it sure is. And that's an unfortunate reality that we've tried to digest a lot.
It's hard.
In the last relaunch and in this relaunch. And if you're curious more about how this all works and what it's been like for the players, on Wednesday night, the first two parts of a four-part documentary from the Open Gym crew will air on TSN, and then I'm sure it'll make its way to the Raptors YouTube eventually. I've seen the first two episodes. It's really good. It takes you a really intimate look inside the bubble. This is obviously going to be a little different because, again, as Eric said, it's not bubbled. But if you want a little window into what that process is like and just how much has gone into keeping players safe and logistically trying to provide basketball, and why, you know, players on the Raptors and especially Masai Ujiri feel that it's important, because it can, you know, bring people together and things like that. Definitely check that out. Check it out anyway, because it's Open Gym, and Open Gym is always great. The Jeffs, Rocky, and Landicho did an awesome job with it, as well as the rest of the Open Gym team. Now, Eric, we're going to talk some basketball. Nick Nurse spoke about Pascal Siakam looking pretty good today, and the ways in which Chris Finch and Nick Nurse are trying to get Siakam involved differently and maybe getting him attacking in different ways, a few more easy buckets, a few more advantage attacks instead of just here's the ball, create the advantage yourself. Siakam, I thought, has had probably the most insightful media availability so far of anyone. That was not the one today where he had no time for us, it seemed like. But, very open, very vulnerable with his earlier one about the mental side of what was going on in the bubble and having not played for so long during a pandemic and just not having fun anymore. And by all accounts, he's getting that back now. I guess that's taking us to just a question of, what are your expectations for Siakam this year? Or if you don't want to say expectations, you know, what constitutes a successful season for him in your eyes?
Yeah, and I don't know if I've landed quite on an answer about that. With what he was saying about trying to find joy in the game again, I'm always, and this isn't to minimize what anybody was dealing with in the bubble, because it was a completely unique you can't modify the word unique. It was a unique experience. It was a unique period of time. But I always wonder with these things, when guys say they weren't, Like, he could see himself not having fun out there. Like, if he were playing better, would he have seen himself having fun out there? Like, it's sort of a chicken or egg situation. And without having been in his head, it's difficult to know. But saying that, like, he's not the only guy mentioning how weird of an atmosphere and how difficult of a time it was to play basketball back in July and August and September. I think, like, Paul George was most notable in saying that, but there were a bunch of guys who had opened up, and certainly the more we can be open and honest about how things affect us and destigmatize all of that, the better it is for our society at whole, as a whole. When last we saw Siakam, obviously he was repeatedly trying to post up Jaylen Brown. That was not great. Yeah.
And Marcus Smart and Shemmy.
Yeah. So what they said today, what Nick Nurse especially said today in terms of, like, trying to get him moving without the ball a bit more in terms of to initiate where he gets the ball, that's promising. I think, like, the steps you want to see are more toward what he was doing in the beginning of the season, operating as an initiator from all over the floor as opposed to just the post, which was where most of his stuff came from in the bubble, especially again in that Boston series. I mean, the guy made second team NBA last year, and I don't want to say, like, we can argue whether he should have or not. Like, I think you had him on your third team. That's probably where I would have slotted mine. And I don't think if he doesn't make an All-NBA team this year, it's necessarily a failure. I think what you want to see is continued growth. You want to see those, you know, that passing come up. That's something that Chris Finch, I believe, messaged in his availability was, you know, he's so good of a player in terms of attracting attention. You want to see him be able to utilize that in terms of making plays for other players. And that comes with reps. You want to see him, you know, not have those stretches where he basically becomes a non-threat from three-point range as he did in the Boston series. And you want to see him be able to do a bit more with a jab step in the mid-range and really find himself better driving lanes as opposed to being more predictable with that. So I think there's not a bar that I can draw. There isn't a line I can draw, but it's more of a holistic feeling, and we'll know whether he's on the right track just by how individual games and sort of weeks-long stretches feel, not whether he's an all-star or all-NBA or any of that.
Yeah, and I feel like part of it too, and I talked about this, I went on William Liu's Raptors Over Everything podcast on Wednesday over at Yahoo Sports, and I feel it's a little awkward to run through this episode because I keep forgetting whether I talked about it on Will's podcast or on our podcast last week. In the case of Siakam, so much of what I'm looking for him will be, like, qualitative. Like, obviously, if his usage increases or his efficiency increases or his percentage of shots at the rim or free throw rate or whatever, all of those are signals. But I'm going to be looking more in, like, the qualitative in terms of, you know, if the first couple don't go, is he staying aggressive? Is he anticipating how the defense is going to react to him? And is he just responding to that, or is he trying to manipulate it? That kind of thing that we kind of charted DeMar DeRozan's growth over the years, you know, going from strictly an ISO guy to a more pick and roll guy to a guy who can get 5 assists a game. And I think it's a similar process to what Siakam's going through now, where I don't doubt that he's going to have good numbers. I thought he kind of slowly trailed off as last season went along, and he still ended up with phenomenal numbers and the second team All-NBA spot. So I certainly don't think there's any risk that he's, you know, not like a 20-point, 7-rebound, 3 or 4 assists kind of guy. I think that's kind of his floor at this point. But the growth beyond that, you know, if those numbers jump to 24, 8, and 4, you know, I don't think that tells me anything that I need to know. What I need to know is how he's coming about those and how the offense is being structured around that, and whether, you know, the games where it's arduous for him to get those numbers. Is that coming at a cost to the team, or is he able to kind of shift into that I don't have it tonight role? Here's how I'm going to use this attention to get others going kind of
and
stuff.
And I think not to put it all on one assistant coach, because it's one assistant coach, but getting like a fresh pair of eyes in Chris Finch, who like is recognized as one of the better offensive minds in this league, like that's got to help, because you know, as much as consistency and cohesion is important, like being able to look at a player who's been in the Raptors developmental system for 4 years, and like so many of the staff members who work with the Raptors have, like, how many times have they seen Pascal Siakam gone through a game or gone through an individual workout or like developed a specific part of his game? I think fresh eyes can't hurt here, and hopefully that's coaches deal a lot more holistically than just one player. But since Pascal Siakam is such a big part of unlocking what the Raptors can be as a whole, I would think that a lot of Chris Finch's headspace is going toward how to better unlock what Siakam is doing out there.
Yeah, and again, like you said, not to put it all on Finch, but Finch is a guy who has worked with, as Nick Nurse pointed out, and as my piece kind of went into on Wednesday, you know, he was brought into New Orleans to try to craft an offense around the Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins pairing. And then obviously those situations went as they did. And then it was, okay, can you build an offense around Zion and Brandon Ingram? And Finch talked about the similarities he sees with Ingram. And I see some similarities in what New Orleans ran for Zion as well. And obviously Siakam's a different kind of guy, but just the way they got Zion some easy buckets, even though it's Zion and everyone's focus was on him, I think is something they can replicate. And, you know, you could go back as far as the early James Harden Rockets years and just kind of how those offenses, and that was pre-D'Antoni, where, you know, some of the knock on Kevin McHale was that he was a little more old school than the Maury Harden kind of approach maybe necessitated. And Finch was responsible with a lot of that offense and turning, you know, the quote unquote Maury ball, where you only shoot at the rim or the free throw line or the 3-point line. You know, he executed a lot of that. He was also in Denver for Nikola Jokic's second year. And, you know, I talked to a couple of Nuggets beat writers, Adam Mars and TJ McBride, and they both said that while Finch was only there for a year and while things have gotten a little stricter since, you know, a lot of the free-flowing stuff they run around to leverage Jokic's creativity was what Finch put in the first place. So, you know, I don't even know if he's going to take these specific plays so much as he's going to, you know, Nick Nurse has this identity as to joke about it, like the mad scientist or whatever someone said on the Zoom call today. But really, we've only seen that materialize on the defensive end for the most part. And he's been pretty innovative on that side. And I think, you know, not that Nate Bjorkgren and Sergio Scariolo aren't good offensive coaches, but, you know, Finch, like you said, is another set of eyes and a set of eyes who has worked with a number of different star profile or star prototypes that need the ball and command attention in different ways, and he's helped with all of those guys. So I think that can only be encouraging for Siakam, and I look forward to writing a lot about the Siakam Lowry pick and roll that I was basically yelling for more of last year and only ever got late in games.
It's really irritating that Nurse and Finch spent what, like 25-30 years in England between them, and I don't know about you, I can't sense, like, I can't hear any semblance of an accent for either of them, whereas Brett Brown, like, definitely had some Aussie in him.
Yeah, I don't know what the case is there.
I mean, they've both been back for a while, so maybe it was there and it's gone. I'll ask them next time.
Yeah.
Seems like a worthwhile trading cap question.
Yeah. Why don't you speak British? Why don't you...
Speak.
I expected you to sound like Austin Powers.
Speak American. yeah.
So beyond Siakam, and again, we could go through every player on the roster, and I don't want to bog you down with all that, but I guess I mean, let's kind of do that. Let's, is there a guy
let's other than. Bop it down, baby.
Yeah, well, we talked about the centers a lot last week, and Aaron Baines and Alex Lana and Chris Boucher, and how that might shift things. And I think we agreed that, you know, with Baines, you don't have to actually shift a lot structurally on either end of the floor, because while he's not Marc Gasol, you know, he does similar things and is comfortable in similar positions. Now, Alex Len and Chris Boucher are different than Serge Ibaka. They're more natural rim runner types or lob threat types. And that requires some tweaking in the second unit. But you're also talking about your second unit centers there. I guess what I'm curious about is if we assume the Raptors are going to tweak their offense, whether that's because Finch is coming in, whether that's because Siakam grows, whether, you know, Nurse just wants to change things up, or because, you know, they were a average to slightly below average half-court offense last year, who else could you see that benefiting? Like, I think Siakam's the focus because he's going to be the highest usage guy. Do you see those moves potentially opening up more in the pick and roll for Fred VanVleet? Do you see them getting Kyle Lowry some more off-ball looks? Does OG Anunoby's usage tick up as a matter of game plan rather than, you know, you and I talked a lot last year about how OG's field goal attempts were almost a bellwether for how the offense was moving because the ball only finds its way to him when the ball is moving around well and the offense is creating breakdowns elsewhere. You know, is there room for him to grow within that? Who else are you looking for to benefit from kind of an offensive reimagining?
Yeah, I think OG would be the first guy, and I'm like not even sure if that's the offensive reimagining or if it's just simply a matter of it being time for that to happen. Well, I guess maybe if you're the Raptors, you argue that his fifth year is the time for it to happen, so you don't run the risk of him increasing his value. It's, you know, I don't think that's how they operate. In fact, I mean, I'm, you know, 98% sure that's not how they operate. And I would anticipate OG's, you know, trending toward a sort of an average usage player, and certainly given a lot of runway early in the season to do more, because he certainly showed signs of that in the bubble. And I do think, like, you're going to see Fred with the ball in his hands some more. And today, and I'm not sure how much his, I don't know what you took about from Nick Nurse's comments on Norm Powell today. Like, it's tough for me to envision a more like Norm friendly role than Norm had last year.
So, here's all the touches you want in the second unit.
Yeah. Like Nick Nurse basically said he was going to give more freedom to Norm. That's what I sort of took it to mean, but I can't think about how that practically would take course, because last year seemed sort of max freedom for Norm. But it sounds like he's going to be given a lot more of that, or at least the same amount if there's no way to get more of that. So I think those are the two guys. And I think we're just going to move toward getting Fred more pick and roll opportunities, because this is the guy who's going to be here long term and who's going to be operating that and taking over that mantle more and more from Kyle Lowry. And you certainly need him to become a more creative finisher around the rim, or a more reliable finisher. And like, we think of this guy as a veteran, and he is, but he's certainly played, you know, spent a lot of his early years playing either off the ball or as much more of a facilitating point guard. And so I think we'll see more of that. And then finally, and I'll throw it back to you here, the eighth man comments today. That's something I want to dive into maybe next week. The Terrence Davis situation certainly complicates it. Like, for me, he would be the, if he were not facing the seven charges he's facing, he would be the obvious candidate to run with that eighth man role. But that would, that's an interesting one, because there is no, and you know, maybe Nick Nurse feels differently with Patrick McCaw, but to me, there's no leader in the clubhouse there. And there's many, from Davis to Matt Thomas to Patrick McCaw to, who knows, DeAndre Bembry. There's lots of different options and ways that conversation can go.
Yeah, and I would say no one's the leader in the clubhouse because that's not what that term means.
Sorry.
The leader in the clubhouse is the person who's leading and is done.
No. You're the leader in, you're the leader in the clubhouse of being pedantic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. Yeah, the eighth man, I don't know. It's interesting. Will Liu asked Nurse about Matt Thomas and a bigger role for him, and Nick was kind of like, yeah, I love the offense, but it's got to be there on defense. I think that's what the Raptors are going to run into, is a lot of these options are not one-way options, but are much more valuable on one end of the floor than the other. Like, McCaw and Bembry are your defense guys, and I'm personally of the opinion that Bembry is a bigger, better McCaw, but Nick Nurse is not of that opinion, I'm sure. So, and then you have Stanley Johnson, who's, you know, I guess if you really need a bucket in the, like, if you really need a contested mid-range pull-up, for some reason,
something's gone terribly wrong.
Yeah. You know, I don't think that, like, I think eighth man is a step too far too soon for O'Shea or Paul Watson, at least to run with in anything more than a, like, rotating eighth man role, which is what Nurse said he wants to avoid.
So I guess that's, let me interrupt for a second. I guess that's where I'm interested. Were you, like, surprised that he seemed, and we'll see what actually happens, and of course injuries will happen, but were you surprised he expressed a desire to have a consistent eighth man role? Whereas last year, I think it sort of ended up being, well, first of all, they weren't healthy, but Davis, like, had slid into the most consistent role there. But it certainly went from, you know, him to Rondé to Matt Thomas at times. Like, there was no cutout eighth guy. There was seven guys, and then a big drop off in terms of consistency of trust, if not minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little surprised just in that I don't think it's realistic early in the year. I think there are too many new pieces and too many question marks, especially when you factor in McCaw not being 100% yet, still coming off that late season knee surgery. And, you know, like, were this a full offseason and training camp, maybe I'd be talking Malachi Flynn in that spot. I had him as kind of the ninth, tenth guy when I drew out the rotation. But even that was with a bit of a caveat that, hey, maybe this is a later in the season thing. Now, am I surprised that that's a goal of Nick Nurse's? No, because we're coming from two playoff runs in a row where he's basically had to shorten his rotation to anywhere from 6.5 to 7.5 guys because there just weren't enough people that he trusted. And while it's very valuable over 72 games to have Rondé and Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas and whoever else that you can throw in those spots, you know, if by the end of the regular season you are still throwing them in randomly and playing the matchups and going with the hot hand, you know, that probably suggests, it probably suggests more that you don't trust them in a playoff series than, oh, I have all these options in a playoff series. So, I understand it. I don't know how realistic it is in the first, you know, little bit of the season where a lot of these options could either be still working their way back from injury or still getting acclimated or on administrative leave from the NBA or any number of other things. So, I don't know.
What's great about this is you've got, like, the returning Raptors, and we know that a lot of, like, the Raptors, Pascal Siakam talked about it in his first availability, were, like, preparing for the, you know, Martin Luther King Day type start that we had been hearing about.
Right.
So I don't think anybody's disappointed to get back to like real gameplay. Like that's the fun part of being an NBA player, is playing in the games. But, you know, they were probably could have talked themselves into a longer off season. And then you've got like Aaron Baines and DeAndre Bembry, who haven't played a real game since March or whatever. I think Baines missed the bubble, I believe. I think he was injured for it, unless I'm making that
Baines?
Up.
Baines? He had COVID.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. So you've got those two guys who haven't played a game in 9 months that are probably like, what does basketball feel like? So you got a nice blend of things going in here. That's not taking into account the likes of Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris, who are probably buzzing at the thought of a exhibition game in Charlotte in front of, I'm guessing, no fans. I don't know what their policy is, but have they said what they're doing for preseason games in terms of fans? Or is it?
They have not yet. No.
Well, that seems like it should be decided.
Yeah.
But that's just an interesting thing to follow, because I do wonder if the guys who logged heavy minutes, you know, Lowry, Siakam, Van Vliet, certainly at the top of that list, are given a more gradual push to the start of the season than they were, than they normally are. But we sort of thought that last year, coming off a title, and then Nick Nurse had like a 7-man rotation to start the year. So I'm not predicting that. I'm just, you know, I'm monitoring it. I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I guess, so the preseason could open, not could, will open on Saturday.
Well, let's, in 2020, everything is conditional. The preseason is scheduled to begin on Saturday, yes.
Okay, so what are you looking for in those games? Like, is there anything? Like I know you don't care quite as much about, like, the Utah Alizé part of the roster as I do. And I don't know that... I guess the better question is, if you're Nick Nurse and you only have 3 preseason games to get guys ready and you've had this short training camp, yes, you need to make decisions on the back end of the roster and those decisions impact the G League and stuff like that. But like, if you're Nick Nurse, do you care, or is your priority in these 3 games? Like, I know he gave lip service to it, but is your priority not getting your main guys up to speed and figuring out things like 8th and 9th man?
Yeah, I wonder. Like, I wonder if like the focus isn't between that, like, you know, end of the roster G League minutia and like the top 3 guys, top 4 guys who basically know what they're gonna be. So I guess like the guy I'm most interested in is OG, just from to the extent that he's playing with the starters. What does that look like? How much has his role increased and changed? That's sort of the most interesting thing to me. And then, like, going on from there, I think that those guys on the periphery of the rotation become the most interesting, because I think that's an open competition. And I think it's, you know, we can talk about the backup center. We did talk about it, and I think... basically, that will come down more to matchups than anything, the Boucher-Lynn question. But I think that, you know, the backup wing minutes behind Norm, I think that's very much a going concern and something that Nick Nurse is going to have to use these games to judge. Like, I don't think he can necessarily afford to use anything but like maybe the fourth quarters of these exhibition games as a who's gonna, you know, stick with as the 15th man and who's gonna, you know, be in the developmental Raptors 905/whatever system. I think most of it is gonna be spent on like guys 5 through 12 or 5 through 13, and so yeah, though, and that's where that my focus is gonna be, kind of.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and I think that that's the most practical use of the time. And obviously, like, you know, Ellenson and Brissett and Watson, those guys are practicing a little more and a little harder than Lowry and Van Vliet and Siakam anyway. So maybe that's the window into those guys. It's also just, yeah, if you're talking about the leverage of these decisions, it's weird because the decisions on the back end of the roster and who makes a team are more immediate, but they are, whereas, you know, rotation decisions you can tweak as you go along, but also, you know, especially in this year's environment where we don't know what the G League is going to look like and you need to have depth now more than ever just in case, you know, those other, the actual on-roster decisions rather than roster bubble decisions are much higher leverage. So, you know, it's tough. It's not an ideal place for any team to be trying to do a two-week training camp with a three-game preseason after a short offseason. It's a shocker. None of this is ideal. So, I guess where we go from here then, Eric, is
Toronto game three.
Yeah. Yeah. So Siakam, Lowry, Van Vliet, Powell, OG and Boucher and Baines are the guys that are pretty much locked in, you'd figure, right?
Yeah. I mean, we can quibble about Boucher. I still think he's going to have to earn it. Like he's, if he looks awful in training sure. camp, I think there's room for him to lose that or at least lose it quickly at the start of the season. And the Raptors use smaller lineups and use Alex Len a bit more. But mm-hmm. yes, I would say he is right now the de facto seventh man.
All right. So yeah, when I drew up the rotation, I had him in there. I had Alex Len in there as well because I had Boucher playing a little bit more power forward to kind of soak up some of those backup wing yeah. minutes. Because weirdly, despite how the offseason went, they suddenly seem a little deeper at either pole of the position spectrum with almost nobody in between, which is where you get into, you know, is it McCaw? Is it Flynn? Is it Bembry? Is it Davis? Is it Thomas? There's a lot of ways it could go. And it's always so interesting philosophically where, like, we know that not having bad players is the way to establish a floor, and having the best players is a way to establish a season. And the Raptors over the last 8 years have very much tried to do both. And that's really going to be tested this year because, toward the very top, they're a little thinner than they have been. But they also might have, you know, 15 guys on the roster who could make a case for bench minutes on a different team. So interesting spot
well,
to be on.
Yeah, I would say,
you know, your 25-man roster isn't all that impressive, but your 40-man's deep.
I would say it's not a bad year to be deep. Just in, like, I mean, no year is bad to be deep, but this season figures to have more bumps than usual. I mean, maybe not compared to the Raptor season last year, because it was just comical in terms of the important man games they lost, but you know, it's not unreasonable to expect a lot of teams to be dealing with that this year, the Raptors included, and I they certainly, based on what the league said this week in terms of resting players, they will be given more leeway to work in rest or, you know, non-load management, load management. So that's, while, you know, as much role specificity and certainty as you'd like, you do have to remain flexible to a large extent. And luckily for the Raptors, that's sort of Nick Nurse's natural resting place. So they should be fine from there.
Who knew that all the disrespect the Raptors get in terms of fewer national TV games is actually the league putting the fix in for the Raptors because there's fewer games that they're not allowed to rest players for?
Well, yes.
Galaxy Brain.
Yeah, no, you've really figured that one out.
Yeah. Okay, last one for you, Eric, before we wrap up and get ready for the preseason here. You addressed this in a mailbag already over the weekend, but for anyone who didn't check that out, first of all, do so. There's our nice words about me in there, because, you know, Eric's on the take. but the idea of trading Kyle Lowry, Eric, and this has come up a number of times on this podcast over the last year or so, maybe even 2 years. You know, I'm of the practical mind that it's just really hard to find a trade partner who could match his $30 million salary close enough without sending back bad money for 2021 while also giving you the assets that would be required for you to part with Kyle Lowry. How do you feel about it? And I know your take on it is probably more like big picture, what he means to the franchise and why you can or can't do that. So rehash, I guess, what your mailbag answer was. Could Lowry get dealt this year?
He can. And again, like there were, like, think even what the Raptors did in terms of signing Baines and Boucher to those bigger contracts without the second guaranteed season. There are a few teams that do that, and that allows you to make trades. So while I still don't think there are a ton of natural trade partners out there for the Raptors, and when you get to a contract like Kyle Lowry's, it becomes more and more complicated and more likely you have to work in a third team in there. So, but having said that, there are more teams that are maybe in position to do that. You know, a guy with Lowry's, what Lowry means to the Raptors, there is an extra cost that's not on the floor, that's just he means more to the Raptors than what he just produces. So I'd still bet against it happening. I think it becomes, you know, you really have to, I don't think they're going to have the directional clarity that is necessary to part with Kyle Lowry, failing like a really, really good offer that is sort of like that multiple first round pick type offer that I don't think is going to come for a 34, 35 year old point guard who's entering unrestricted free agency. Like, sure, the Pelicans got it for Drew Holiday, but A, he's younger, and B, they're in very specific circumstances of trying to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. That, you know, the market for that, the market should not be determined by that trade, because this, you know, the context is required. So overall, I would be surprised if Lowry is dealt, but, you know, we're not guaranteed a super teamless league for that long. And that, you know, that doesn't mean that the league becomes uncompetitive all of a sudden, but even if the Lakers are the clear favorite, I don't think they're the clear favorite in the way that, you know, the Heat were when LeBron, Wade, and Bosch were in their primes, or the Warriors were when Kevin Durant went there. And therefore, there are more teams that can talk themselves into the types of arms races we've seen in the Eastern Conference, especially, you know, in the trade deadline of 2019 or what happened in the offseason of 2019. So the conditions could become like right for a move, but failing that sort of arms race, I think it's more likely than not that he doesn't go anywhere. That was very convoluted, I realize, but you know, it's tough to give the whole picture because it's pretty damn complicated, I would say. And that also goes to the Raptors' position as trying to keep that cap room, which would necessitate, you know, renouncing the rights or renouncing Kyle Lowry's bird rights, which would make what his next contract could be with the Raptors if he were to stay substantially lower than, you know, the $43 million cap hold he'll have in next summer as it currently stands.
All right, quick sub question. 7-time All-Star Kyle Lowry, yes or no?
Yeah, sure. Going with that.
Let's do it.
I think betting on inertia here is the, and that's not to say Kyle doesn't deserve it. Like Nick Nurse said that last year was Kyle's best. And while I don't necessarily agree, I take his point, and he was very deserving of the spot. And I think the Raptors are a team that should likely continue to outperform expectations. And I think Kyle Lowry will get a lot of credit for that. And I think he'll probably deserve a lot of credit for that, too.
Yeah, he's great. All right, Eric. This is kind of part two of our training camp podcast spread out over the 2 weeks of weird training camp. The next time we talk, there will have been preseason games for us to analyze. So thankfully, we'll have some more tangible stuff to kind of break down rather than just the theoretical. Now, having said that, I don't know where I was going with that. This is great podcast work, Blake. This is, help me out here, Eric.
Well, hopefully this can be edited out.
It's fine. It's fine. I sound like an idiot, but I forgot what I had one more point to make before we close.
About potentially not being on the podcast next week? Cause that's where I thought you were going.
Yeah, I might not be on the podcast next week, but there will be basketball to talk about. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is, in the past, I have thrown random statistical over-unders at you on our official season preview podcast, which if I'm on before the season starts, I will do that again, Eric. So get ready for over-unders that I'll make up as I go. That's what I was trying to tease.
Or if you're not, I will just toss them at somebody else. Steal your gimmick. Who notably stole somebody's gimmick?
Damian Sandow's the big one, where he was just doing the gimmick pretending. But
yeah, that's neither here nor there. Were you a fan of Kenny Omega's work on Impact?
No.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of that whole storyline.
Okay.
Yeah, disappointing. All right, guys, we will talk to you next week with actual preseason games. Again, theathletic.com/we the six if you're interested in checking out our written work as well. Eric, thanks so much, buddy.
Blake, keep it cool. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.